my shepherd, I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green, he leads me by quiet pools. Yeah, though I walk through dark valleys, you are near me. Protection and guidance are comforting me everywhere that I go. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Pro-Life Team Podcast. I'm Jacob, and I'm here with Dinah. And today, we're going to be talking about the work that Dinah's been connected to, from Africa to adoptions. But to start off, Dinah, I'd like to have you share what it's like to be in a multi-generation pro-life ministry, being the second generation, and then with your son, Brandon, being in the third generation. What's that like? Or, you know, what are your thoughts on your family pro-life story?
Well, what I tell audiences is my claim to fame is I am the daughter of the mother of the precious feet, and I am the mother of the creator of Bright Course. So there you are. I am sandwiched in the middle, and there you are. First of all, it's a privilege that a lot of people don't ever get to be able to have a walk in a legacy like this. Walk not just out of my parents' legacy, but then watching my son and his wife walk into that legacy. So yeah, it sort of is something that, well, I did try to early on. I started another business and started moving in a direction. I'm an entrepreneur, and I realized that I could not get away from pro-life if I wanted to, that it was something that was so ingrained in me. And, you know, my parents, growing up in my household, I have five siblings, but my parents were grassroots crusaders. And they were back when there was no technology. It's not like today. And so word of mouth, literature, speaking, your contact with people was much more organic. And yet, Mom created the little precious feet, and then they started distributing them to organizations all over the world, actually. And it grew and grew, became the international pro-life symbol. But through that, also my parents, they spoke all over. They went all over the world, and they spoke about pro-life. They have stories of, they were in New Zealand and actually had to flee under police protection because they were beating down the front door of the church they were speaking in. But they spoke all over. In fact, it was the overarching issue in our family. It just was. And in fact, we used to laugh if we were in a hotel together with my dad and you ever wanted to clear out a jacuzzi that was crowded, you sent dad ahead of time because he'd start talking about pro-life. And people would get up and leave, and then you'd just have the whole thing to yourself because he could clear a room, you know? We lived it, everything about it. And so it was very uncalculated what I did. It sprang out of these rich roots of my childhood. And in my childhood were the greats, Father Paul Marx. You know, I remember him visiting my home more than once. Phyllis Schlafly was my mother's good friend. People might not recognize these names. Jack Wilkie and his wife were my parents' good friends. And these were the people that they sort of put the whole movement together. It was very disjointed. They didn't know at that point. It didn't exist. And so that's what I lived under. So
yeah,
it was an amazing, amazing thing that you don't even realize you're involved in till you look back on.
So a few weeks ago, I saw Brandon at the Charlie Kirk Memorial. He was walking, looking for his son, essentially to go help his son with carrying lots of food. And I just got to see him for a few moments as I was on my way to the restroom. And it just strikes me that, you know, what Charlie Kirk was doing when it came to promoting the gospel, promoting life, and also having a patriotic, you know, desire for everyone to own a home and these different, you know, this, you know, love of country. It really seems to reflect the roots that your, you know, where Heritage House started with patriotic flags and having a heart for God and how these meld together and the life precious feet. I felt like there was a lot of like commonality between the Charlie Kirk ministry and Heritage House, but that's Heritage House's roots from like, I don't know how many decades ago, but would you, what are your thoughts on that?
I've not thought of that before, even though it's obvious.
It is obvious, yeah.
But no one has ever put it in that way. I was raised, my father was a veteran of World War II. And every morning he was a principal. So during the summer, we had summers off. And so we would go and we'd stay in a cabin on a lake. And every morning it started. We were there on the porch. And we said the Pledge of Allegiance. And my father read out of the Bible. And then we all prayed. And then we started our day. And I have the cutest story of my dad. He had a flagpole in front of our house. And every morning he would raise that flag. And one morning he was out there and he was raising the flag. And this trash truck was going by and the driver pulled over and he got out. And as my dad raised that flag, that trash man saluted. And my dad and mom, originally they were anti-communists. Before the pro-life movement, way back when I was little, they went and saw a speaker. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. Nobody will know it now. But anyway, the speaker, and he's speaking all over the country about the threat of communism after World War II. And that's what they got involved in. And they took it, you know, they were grassroots on steroids. But then the whole patriotic, it was woven through. In fact, my dad was a principal and he was having his school do a whole patriotic program. You know, how America is so great. He was called by the FBI. This is the truth. He was called by the FBI and told them that they had information because this sounds crazy. This sounds out there in hat stuff. But there were communist cells back, you're talking in the 50s. And they had targeted Dad because of this.
Wow.
And had warned him. And I remember, you know what his response was? He gathered the family together. We prayed and he went on with his program. Nothing ever happened, but he was so committed. I mean, I think in those World War II veterans, if the encapsulation of their feeling toward America is found in Iwo Jima.
Okay.
Yeah. The statue, Iwo Jima statue, where they're putting that flag up. I think that is the embodiment of those World War II veterans. And I know how dismayed my dad was in the 60s at the flag burning and the, yeah.
Yeah. And,
but you're right. We were raised. It was part of it.
Yeah. And I feel like, so he was being threatened to try and I'm guessing, or I'm hearing that maybe the threats for him just trying, you know, they're trying to have him stop or just be silent. Yeah. And yep. That's continued. I feel like that's the threat today is for people to stop and to be silent.
Yeah. And using violence to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet what we're seeing now, in fact, I'm wearing my Charlie Kirk t-shirt.
Oh, awesome. I didn't even realize that when I asked you the question.
Yeah. It says,
this is the turning point.
This is the turning point, yeah. Charlie Kirk. And boy, isn't it. We're seeing it. I see the patriotism part of it turning. Really, all of us are just sort of standing there in awe at watching, even though there's a lot of, well, we know we've stepped on the tail and the head is raising up and flailing around. But I can't say if the abortion issue is feeling that same change of heart. I don't know nationally. If it is or not.
Yeah. It seems like there are winds on the horizon. And we've definitely had, with Roe versus Wade being overturned, there's been some really good progress in Texas with them banning abortion pills and then making it so that a citizen can sue to enforce that. Sue a distributor, producer, anyone who is a drug dealer of abortion pills, but not sue the woman who would be without informed consent, possibly, or a consumer of that, but focusing on the system that produces and distributes.
That is it's actually a law in the federal books that you can't distribute abortion paraphernalia or medicine. It just sits there. That's why cities are becoming sanctuary cities for pro-life against abortion based on that. And I'll think of the law in a minute. But anyway, okay, I have some thoughts on this. We saw Roe fall, never thought we would in all of our life. And that was a great victory. But always, always, always the enemy is just, you know, they have a bloodlust and they're hanging on. It's like their claws are in and they can't let go. And so it shifted. And this is something that we don't realize. The triumph in Roe here in Arizona and a lot of states, we lost that. We got more because we ended up with Roe going, but then we had the abortion pill. And first of all, we had written into our amendment of our Arizona Constitution, and this is not just Arizona, these are states all over the country. They come in, they lie, people think they're signed. In fact, get this, Jacob. I set up a table right next to the table where they're getting signatures to put it on the ballot. And I was listening to the comments, and this lady I had just signed. I said, do you realize you signed to make abortion legal up until the day of birth in Arizona? She says, no, I'm pro-life. They were lying through their teeth just to get the signatures. And they did. So then it went on the ballot. And this is not just our state. This is a country throughout the United States. This is an effort, national effort. And so the way it was worded on the ballot was, this will help women preserve their rights, on and on and on. And then on the negative side, it said, voting no, this will take away the rights and take away. I mean, it negativized every positive thing they said. It was stunning. And so we have in our Constitution that every protective law, they're going down now, one by one, every protective law in Arizona to protect the woman or to put any restrictions on the abortion industry fell. But even in Texas, and in, well, Texas has that, but you can get abortion pills so easily. I just Googled it.
Yeah.
And right now it's against the law to get abortion pills in Arizona. They're challenging each of the laws since that constitutional amendment went through. But right now it's illegal, I believe still. But it doesn't matter because you go on Google and it says, order abortion pills, Arizona. And it's $120 to get the abortion pills. But now we have seen the greatest blow. Honestly, I'm sick. The FDA just legalized just gave the green light to abortion pills that are generic.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they came on the heels of them challenging the regular abortion pills, but now they're, and then after looking like we had a pro-life victory, then they approved the generic version.
And so now you're going to go to Google and it's going to say $20, or I don't know, it's going to be way lower. So we have this monster row. Is no more, but we have this monster in the abortion pills. Half of the abortions now in this country are abortion pills, and there's no tracking. And so, it's something that we need. We're flailing. We're going, how do we get ahead of it? And that brings me to my son. So now take the third generation who, he has taken it into the technological age like nobody I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
And his mom is in awe, but I shouldn't be. I raised a kid and he was a little bit brilliant. But anyway, the nurse chat that he has, through Infinite Word.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you something. It's working and we're in a rural. I've got three rural centers. I am back being the executive director of the centers that I founded and then was away from for 15 years and they were tanking. So I took it back. So I'm running the centers. So, but it's a whole new ballgame out there. Oh my gosh. When I left, the internet was nothing. I come back and it's everything. So we have to change tactics. In fact, I just met with a young woman who says she wants to put it on TikTok and on Snapchat. And I'm like, that's how we have to go. And so we actually do a campaign that does it. And we have a website and we have the 24/7 nurse chat. And for listeners who don't know, it's a bot on our website and it's put out by Infinite Worth, which is part of Heritage House. And it's a bot and it has, so a girl can be thinking about the pill at 3 a.m. and in our area. And so she can Google abortion in Sholo, Arizona, and our center will come up. Get her to the website and then she can chat with the nurse.
Yeah.
And we are now, we just did a pregnancy test this morning. Friday we did one. We're getting results now. And we offer free ultrasound. And so I think as more centers really grab hold of the value of this, but they have to do it right, man. You have to be in there moving your presence up on Google and these, you have to, so that you show up when they put in at 3 a.m, abortion pill, Sholo, Arizona. You have to be who shows up.
Yeah, that's, I would agree completely. Yeah, and a lot of that work that people have done over the years to show up on Google is now helping them show up in the AI results, like on ChatGPT and Grok and Gemini.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's based on content. Really? Content and citations, authority scores. A lot of the same work that people would do to show up on Google over the years has a lot of similarities to what's involved with showing up in these different AI solutions that are providing answers. Just how Google probably provides more answers today, but the amount of answers being provided AI is growing rapidly. So things are changing.
I just had a question, and instead of going to Google, I went to AI chat.
Yeah.
You know, it's the first time I've done that, but you're right. It's changing. And again, when I'm what's known as the mom of Big Love. I came into the movement when, you know, all we had was stickers and literature. We would, like, I would go, and phone booths. Oh my gosh. Can you believe that? We had phone booths, and in the phone booth was a phone book, and they were about that thick.
Yeah.
What we did, so we would list ourselves under abortion, but then they got wise to that. So they made us
abortion alternatives
under abortion. Right. And so what we did is we got stickers. You're not going to believe this. We went to every phone booth in the area and we put our stickers in the abortion, under abortion.
Or in the phone book.
Stickered.
So that, like in the phone booths or the phone books.
Yes. In
Smart.
The book, when they looked up abortion, our sticker was there, and it said something generic, but to get them into our center, and we had to do different things. It took a lot more, like, you had to drive somewhere, but we did it for presence, and it, you know, paid off. We're rural, very, very rural, but when I retired in 2010, we have 3 centers. We have the only center on an Indian reservation in the country, and that Indian reservation is what I call my rural-urban center, because it is the highest, at one point, they had the highest murder rate per capita in the country. I don't think they hold that anymore. I don't know, but that was probably 15 years ago. But they have, it's just, you know, highly federalized. They, you know, all of everything they need, except they have a tremendous poverty, but also are handed everything. It's a wicked combination. So we started a center down there. And so, you know, but between these 3 centers and another one's in Springerville, it's very small. They don't see many, but we were seeing 1,250 on average client visits a month.
Whoa.
A month. And most of them were done between the White River Center and our center. And a lot of them were parenting. They were, you know, at that point it was called Earn While You Learn. But because we just, our demographics are just so small we grow in the summer, but we grow with retirees and, you know, vacationers. But anyway, but to see that many people we saw a lot of pregnancy tests because word of mouth is so powerful. And back then, word of mouth was everything. I wonder if it still is, even with the internet. What do you think?
So in communities under 50,000 in a county, I would say word of mouth is number 1. Google/internet is number 2. And I would phrase it as word of mouth by a friend and or word of mouth by a professional. But yeah, so in counties under 50,000, it's number 1 with internet/Google number 2. And then in counties bigger than 50,000 people, word of mouth is number 2 and Google's number 1.
Interesting, because we are, our county altogether is that, but we're very spread out. It's out west, you know.
Okay.
And so we got a lot of miles between our centers and so... You know, that makes sense. People don't understand the difference. Rural centers are a very unique in a lot of ways. And so you just approach things a little differently. But I will say that the internet has leveled the playing fields in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it definitely provides access for so many different groups to compete with Planned Parenthood. That's just simply, you know, larger if you compare it to a given pregnancy clinic and their budget and marketing tools. But as a group, we're able to compete quite well because we have so many groups competing with, you know, per county, per area, per, you know, per geographic area.
Right. Well, you know, one thing that's interesting, we were 3 hours from an abortion clinic.
Phoenix, and in the past, or where would that be?
Yeah, okay. Phoenix. We're 2.5 hours maybe from Flagstaff, but they always did very limited. They never, you know, they were limited even back then. But Phoenix would be your main abortion clinics. We always had a window. So, and pregnancy tests weren't readily available all over. And so our advertising about free pregnancy tests was powerful. And so we would, and if they wanted an abortion, we had this window where they would have to go down 3 hours away. They'd have to plan it. And so we were the first stop. That's why we were seeing so many. And so, and we had a lot of saves, but that's different. That's all changed. It doesn't matter that the abortion clinic's in Phoenix, because they go to the internet, they look up abortion pill, and in their area, these abortion pill sites pop up, and then they order the pill, and, you know, they could be 14 and never tell their parents, and they deliver a dead baby alone in their bathroom. That's what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And so it's, for us, it is a whole different, just, it's a whole different method that we have to come up with to get in to touch these women, to connect with these women.
Yeah, exactly. And now they're getting it shipped. Some people have shipped it in bulk, or they're stockpiling so they can hand them out or distribute them in some way. And these pills are available even on Amazon.com. Like, they're like, it's there.
Are you serious?
Yeah, with insurance, it's its lowest. Ours, with insurance, it ranges from, with insurance, it's, yeah, $2, $13, $5, $45. Without insurance, it ranges from like $13, $18,
$24 on up. I need to pull that up.
There's different products that they have, different brands, different, but there are several on Amazon under Mifepristone and Misoprostol.
I'm usually not taken by surprise because I read a lot, get a lot of information. That one is stunning.
Yeah, because people trust Amazon for all, I wouldn't say all shopping, 80% of shopping, I would say.
Yeah. I would have never thought that. I have a little lake. It's a pond that wants to be called a lake. And I wanted to stock it with some fish. Where did I look? Amazon. I am not kidding
you.
Live fish.
Wow.
Shipped to you. Anyway, so you're right. I would have never thought that. Yeah. And yet, that's what, but Jacob, that's what we're up against. And that's why, again, just talking to this little gal, and she is a younger generation. She understands marketing. And I said, here's our message. See, our message used to be, oh, are you pregnant? We care. Or, oh, are you pregnant? You know, you don't have to do it. There's another way. I don't think that message is well anymore. How about this? A positive pregnancy test? You may have ectopic. Now, this is not short and pithy, but you may have ectopic, or it could be an early pregnancy loss. You need to know for your own health.
Yeah.
Before you take that pill.
Yeah.
The only way you can know is an ultrasound. We offer it free, you know. So we just need to put just a little bit of doubt and a little bit of fear, and it's valid fear. I'm not fear-mongering here. My goodness. Think about the girl who has an ectopic pregnancy. Now, that, and the numbers vary, but I've seen as low as 1 in 20 pregnancies end in ectopic, up to 1 in 40. That doesn't matter. That's still, think of the number of pregnancies. All right. Even if it's 1 in 40, think about that. So they get a positive pregnancy test because the HCG, of course, is elevated, registers on the pregnancy test, even though they have no way of knowing it's ectopic in the tube developing. And so they do, they get the mifepristone, they take the pills, and then they
experience the bleeding and the pain.
The experience, exactly.
And it matches,
they have it.
Yeah, the what they think is the abortion is, it could be the ectopic pregnancy having a rupture.
Well, or progressing. Let's say that they have the pain, they have some blood show, but they don't know, who knows?
It could be the rupture, go, you know, getting closer, or, yeah.
Or, yeah, so they end up thinking they have aborted, and they have this baby like a ticking time bomb in their fallopian tube. And when they explode, that is actually something that is deadly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, how unbelievable that they're giving these pills without no medical, no doctor, no nurse, no, nothing. 14-year-old, older, ordering it online, getting it in the mail without her parents' knowledge, and delivering a dead baby in her, unless she has ectopic, in which case she thinks she's aborted and then life-threatening. You know, they did that latest study and they found out 1 in 10 women had physical, adverse physical.
From the abortion
pill. Enough to put them in.
Yeah, and it was, the FDA had said 0.5%, and then it came out to be 10.5 or 11%. So
it was 22 times as high as what the FDA said.
Now, I want to ask you a hard question. So feel free to pass if the timing's not right. If someone is diagnosed with having an ectopic pregnancy, how long do you think is reasonable to wait? Or what are your thoughts on what should be done next? Should it be removed right away to avoid rupture, or is it better to wait until the baby passes? Or like, how do you weigh that? I lean on removing it right away, but I've heard people say,
I faced that with my last one.
Okay.
Yeah. They thought she was ectopic. So that was the question. All right. I am not a medical personnel, but what I have read, you need to take care of it. If the baby's developing in the fallopian tube and it bursts, it's life-threatening. Nobody will debate that.
Yeah.
And there is no chance of that baby living. This is not an abortion.
Yeah.
And so there's no chance.
Yeah. And until the day comes when there's a way to move and, you know, move that baby. And my understanding is that when it's in the fallopian tube, the baby is not getting nutrients because the food is not passing through the, the wall of fallopian tubes not designed to provide what it needs for life-sustaining resources. And so the baby is malnourished in the fallopian tube as well. And it might be the sac that's growing in that fallopian tube that makes it.
Right.
It's essentially, it sounds that the baby is not going to live very long, and I'm not even sure what they can do to move it, but there's a lot going on there. And I think the best thing to do is to save as many lives as possible and to not play with hours and days.
Right. And this is something I don't even think it's in our ballpark of discussion in abortion personally. Because it's a no-brainer.
Well, the reason why I bring it up is because I've heard some groups or people actually say they should wait until the baby passes, and I don't agree with that. I think that's plain dangerous.
Maybe it'll pass. Maybe it won't.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll rupture.
Yeah.
With no, what they're saying is there shouldn't be any intervention whatsoever. I don't know. But I think I look at that and I say, okay, let's concentrate on the 99.99999% where we're dealing with this without that factor. And I think the thing that has got me it's almost breathtaking to think that these young teenagers can order the pill and mark down they are 12 weeks pregnant. And I have sat across from countless numbers of them over the years. And I'm telling you, they don't know how far along they are. They might have a period. A lot of times, young women have a second period after they're pregnant. And they can have blood show throughout the early. They have no clue, or they don't know which guy and which encounter. I mean, there are so many times that these young women have been wrong. Without an ultrasound, they don't know. And then they have the ultrasound, and then they know how far along they are. So what you have is you have women just saying, oh, I'm 9 weeks. And in reality, they're 12 weeks or they're 15 weeks. And they're just popping the pills because they're told it's just like a period. Oh, you'll have some period cramps.
Wow. So
it is shocking.
I just did a podcast yesterday with an author of a children's book. And the author wrote the book it's about her granddaughter's pregnancy and her grandchild. I mean, her daughter's pregnancy with her granddaughter or grandson being in the womb all the way through development and born. And she's writing one book per grandchild. And so she's got 7 grandchildren and she's working through them. So the first two are about two of the boys' grandchildren. But what was interesting is that this book talks about what an ultrasound is, what trimesters are. And it makes it relatable so that, you know, a child 4 years old, 5 years old, you know, can understand their own story and their sister or brother's story. And right. So it's really,
That's
it's a really exciting.
I've not heard of
it. It's a book that talks about that story in a way that in a way that a child can understand it, because a child has seen ultrasound images, and it's encouraging moms and dads to share, you know, their story as well as their sibling story, and just to embrace and sort of, I feel like it's a culture of life building concept, is to have a book that talks about, you know, the ultrasound to children before they can read and after they can read, and then that early time of their life. And I think it might end up helping more children become doctors. Like, I think that's my perception, is that if a child ends up loving that book, it might end up, you know, helping them make decisions that will help them become OB doctors or OB nurses. And I think it's a good thing.
We need a pro-life OB doctors and OB nurses.
We do.
And absolutely. Absolutely. That's wonderful.
I want to hear about Ethiopia and the battle in Africa. I know that you're involved there. Tell us what's going on in Africa.
My husband and I started a maternity home in Ethiopia, and it was about in 2006, I think. It lasted in its form for about 6 years, and then it's complicated. And so we dissolved it. But after he died in 2016, started it back up in a different, under the radar more kind of, but we house girls and we house young women who have made the decision to abort and actually got into the abortion clinic or on their way or to the hospital. We have people, and I don't know them. This is not something that I'm involved in, but there are pro-life Ethiopians, because the message is getting out in the hospitals and even in these abortion clinics. I don't know what their criteria is, but they'll have a woman, maybe she's very upset or maybe unsure or whatever, but they call us. And I have the Ethiopian side of my heart runs the ministry over there. Her name is Meseret, and they'll call Meseret. And so housing over there, housing here is it's not something that you find as the reason they will abort kind of thing. Very seldom. There's just too many social programs here, but there's none. And so the pressure to abort on a young woman, it's staggering. So when they make that choice for life, it's stunning, because if they're looking at social ostracization, they're looking at not getting married, or certainly not getting married to a quality man, because they'll be rejected. They're looking at how do you have a baby and work. Now, our program is a year. It goes a year, and they hand sew clothes for the poor children, and we just give them to them. We don't sell them. We go into a village, and we outfit the whole village with their hand-sewed clothes, and they get paid from the ministry. They get paid per piece. So they leave with some savings, and a lot of times we can reconcile with their families. They have somewhere to go, but Meseret does an amazing job. I'm going there in November. I'll be going, and I go about once a year and check up and take baby clothes. But anyway, what's happened in all of these African countries, and there are a lot of African countries who have Christian roots. Ethiopia's huge, you know, Ethiopia. You find it in Isaiah. Ethiopia is mentioned in Isaiah.
Wow.
I mean, it is an ancient.
That's true.
And yes, and Ethiopia has Christian roots, and they say they have the Ark of the Covenant. I don't know if they do. And because, who was it? One of the apostles went to Ethiopia. So at any rate, but these countries that are child-centric and their family is still the foundation to their culture, to their tribe, and to their cities, that the family is the hinge that swings all the doors. And so anyway, that's where the abortion industry is going in. And it's under Marie Stopes. Marie Stopes is a, like Planned Parenthood, same idea, but it's from Britain. And they've put all of two things. They put the Marie Stopes clinics, but then they have this, it's a blue star. And this blue star, all your stores and anywhere, they got them to put it up. And I don't think they really understand what they're doing, but I don't know. They probably gave, all right, this is conjecture, but they probably gave financial incentive, because that gets you everywhere there. Anyway, but you see all these blue stars. Well, that says to any woman, I can tell you where to go to get an abortion. So we when I was there, we did, my husband and I did a pro-life conference there with pastors. We're trying to, you know, wake people up. And so we thought, well, they have a blue star, so we want something. So we designed a logo, and in Amharic, they had the two main languages are Oromofon and Amharic. And so we had a picture of a baby with an umbilical cord and then a drawing. And then in those two languages, the equivalent of it's a child, not a choice, or something like that. And they were yellow oval, which die cutting was not a readily available thing. So the girls in our maternity home cut out hundreds of yellow oval stickers. And they have these things called bijages, and they're little, they look like little beetles, and they're a motorcycle engine. And then they take people all over the city. They're taxis, but they're cheap taxis. You've seen them. So they love putting stickers on. So we took our hundreds of stickers and put them on all the bajajas. I still have pictures of these bajajas zipping around with our yellow sticker on it. Oh, it's a child, not a choice. Anyway, but they are building the largest abortion clinic in Africa, in Ethiopia right now. There is a... I mean, it is so perverse, and so it just reminds me of this bloodlust, and that this animal has its talons sunk deep in its prey and it won't let go. And so they have to just devour more and more and more. And along with that culture is, of course, all of the other things that go along with it culturally that have led to our downfall that they're pushing. They're having a harder time because culturally they are not woke. But the abortion, these girls are not told anything, and they'll go in because it is an answer to a problem and what they're doing. And we know anywhere there's abortion legalized and pushed, it rents, it tears the fabric of that culture.
Wow.
And we're seeing it. And it breaks my heart because it is a very, so many of them, they're very child-centric. They love their kids. They celebrate their kids. And you're seeing, that's what it's destroying. So it's destroying at the core, you know. And people say, well, you know, there's so many poor and starving kids. And, you know, now, they say that here there's unwanted kids. There aren't unwanted kids. There are wanted kids. But, you know, but over there, there are. But the answer isn't to kill them. You know what, Jacob? If they put as much money into programs that empowered mothers and fathers to start little businesses and to get out of poverty, if they took the money they have put to push abortion and perform abortion and the family planning and the all of the other stuff, if they took that money and empowered the parents, they could have completely transformed the culture. But that's not their goal.
Yeah. Yeah. An evil source or an evil root isn't going to produce good ideas or
right.
Good fruit.
You're right. And yet, you know, our mamas, I'm now many years into this. And so I actually get pictures of the children that were babies born. Actually, to one of my grandsons, was Samuel, Brandon's son, was actually in the program. And his mom met Don and Brandon, and she said, through an interpreter, I want to place my baby for adoption with Don and Brandon. And I said, God's going to have to want that real you're going to have to, God is going to have to, that's going to have to be his will, because there's no way that you choose the family and then have it happen. It's the other way. There were orphanages, and at that point, they were still placing for adoption. But they chose Don and Brandon, and 9 months later, they had Samuel in their arms.
Yeah, and Samuel was the son that Brandon was looking for to help him carry the food at the Charlie Kirk Memorial. And I remember hearing, I think Samuel gave an interview after Charlie Kirk was assassinated / martyred. Yeah. And he was, you know, talking to an AP reporter, and Samuel's got, you know, a very focused heart for God. What are your thoughts on Samuel?
Yes, he does. To tell you, I held him very close to when he was born. I was going quite a bit to Ethiopia then, and I had the maternity home, and his mama was in it. And so I have known my grandson since the beginning, since his mama was pregnant with him. And that's unusual. He, you know, I have to tell he and I are very close. He was struggling with adoption, you know, identity. You have the race issue, you have all of that. And it all sort of gets into a murky swirl when you're adolescent and has to just sort of swirl around. And so he was struggling with that. And we were talking. And so he said, "Grandma, we have to have lunch. Got to take me out for lunch." Okay. So that was about, 6 months after he had voiced some concerns and some. So I took him out. And I said, "How you doing with that? How you doing with that struggle?" And he says, "You know, Grandma, it isn't a struggle anymore." This makes me cry. He said, "I know who I am, and I know my identity is in Christ, and that's all that's important." And I just still choke up about it. And he is so focused. He loves the Lord. He goes on missions. And this is also my point. If you would have looked at his mother and her circumstances, and she's poor, and you would have passed judgment. You know, people saying, "Well, that baby would have better been aborted." How do you know? How do you know God's plan and purpose for any of these children? There are a whole lot of things that can happen in life that we don't plan on, we don't foresee. And that young man, you're going to hear more about him. He's passionately pro-life.
Yeah. Yeah. I've spent some time with him.
Jesus.
We share, a place to stay at some of the conferences. He's been often, part of Brandon's, takes one of the rooms, and we have a lot of people that we share these houses with as we come together for these conferences.
Yeah.
And Samuel is very consistently, he has these bracelets. Like one of them, I think was, the gospel story. It's like a bracelet that helps him, essentially when you ask
right.
about it, it invites you to, represent each color
right.
as part of the gospel story. And he was ready to share
yep.
that, and he was well practiced, he was ready and excited to share the gospel story and,
yeah.
and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Just never know. We have no right to pass judgment on who is going to starve and not make it, and who is going to shine, and who is going to have a life of meaning and purpose, because God intended every child to have that. And sin gets in the way and poverty gets in the way. But when God moves, we don't have the right to pass judgment. We just step out of the way. And so, yeah, I have four adopted children, three of them from Ethiopia.
Wow.
And yeah, I'm a very rich grandma.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you is about adoption. And I know you've talked about it already, but can you expand more or just share some more thoughts on adoption?
I actually, in running the centers all those years, God brought me women who wanted a place for adoption. Most centers our size in their whole history never see a single woman who wants a place for adoption. I saw over 50. Placed over 50, not saw, but placed. Crazy stories. But the first story was, my mom came home from a conference. She said, this couple, they're wonderful. And if you ever have an adoption, and we had a young woman, first girl, pregnant girl we ever took in. Mike and I took girls in for 6 years. We had our own, we had three of our five kids at the time. And we had a trailer on the side of our house, and so for 6 years, we'd take these girls in, and they were sort of part of our family, but they had their own quarters. I'm sorry, I lost my thought. My alarm
went off. Oh, no worries.
So we had this young woman living with us. She was 16. She'd been raped at a party. Whose the baby was because of her lifestyle. And so she came and she stayed with us. And she decided to place for adoption. Mom had that little scrap of paper she had given me. Oh, they made a contact. Catherine, the baby. She had the baby. And this was the first adoption we'd ever done. We, by the way, were not an agency. We worked through an agency. So they had an agency. Anyway, that baby is now probably 48 and has children and grandchildren. And when we save a child, this is what people don't realize. We don't save a baby. We save a generation and another generation, and on down it goes. I mean, this is unbelievable, because if Catherine had been taken out of the picture, none of these people, this large family now, I have a picture of this gathering, and you look at that from her. And the other thing is, the parents, when they adopted, they were so moved by her story and what we're doing, they went home and started the Catherine Foundation in Maryland, where they live, and they're a huge pregnancy center. You know how many babies they've saved, how many women they've helped because of Catherine. So, and I've done a lot of adoptions, and I'm still in contact with the birth moms. I'm in contact with the babies placed for adoption as adults now. It's pretty crazy. It's crazy to be that old.
Wow. So we've been working with the Catherine Foundation for many, many years. I had no idea that it had roots reaching into the Prescott, Arizona area, or
Sholo. Snow. Prescott.
Yeah, I mean, Sholo.
Yeah, Sholo, Arizona. She lived, her mama lived with my husband and I. And then after the baby, she went home for a year, did not do well, and came back and graduated high school and went on to college. And yeah, and I'm still in contact with her now.
Wow. Wow. Such a deep, this is good. Well,
isn't that amazing?
It is. Yeah. It's interesting how the pro-life movement, the more you get to be connected with different people, the world just seems like it's really well weaved together when it comes to all these people working in the same, on the same mission, on the same way of serving Jesus.
And Jacob, having been in it so long, I mean, I've been involved with Heartbeat when it was AAIA, way back speaking. My husband and I used to speak on opening your homes to, we called it the shepherding family and experience. And so that's where we were coming from originally. But so we've just watched this thing blossom and grow. But when you meet pro-life people, there is something different. It's just different than anything else. It's just a connection. I think it's a connection because we're all fighting for people we'll never meet. I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
And we have a passion for something that we may never see the results of our effort. And, the greatest, one of the neatest things, I just had an event and I had a young man come and speak. He's 32 and his mother actually lives in the area. And I noticed that she was really friendly to me. I'd reacquainted myself with her and I couldn't figure out why. And she said, "Don't you remember?" And I'm like, "Oh crud, there goes my memory again." And she said, I came to the center and I was going to get an abortion. I was adamant. I talked to you for a long time and you told, and, but I left committed to the keeping the appointment at the abortion clinic. She said, and I did. But she said, I was laying there on the ultrasound table, and I remembered, because that's before we had ultrasounds. She said, I remember you telling me that whatever you do, you ask to see the ultrasound because you need to know what you're choosing. You're making a choice, but you need to know what you're choosing. So she asked to see the ultrasound, and they said no. She got up and walked out. And this young man now, came, yeah. And he's alive.
Wow.
Something, or I'll get a tap on the shoulder. They'll say, "Do you see this child? This happened in Walmart. And do you see this child? I talked to you." How many of us, I have a high school education and yet I am in a ministry. And so many are like this, by the way. So many of us are called to this ministry and we're just normal people in an extraordinary ministry saving lives. Where do you get to do that?
Yeah.
Doctors have to study really hard and you have to be really smart. EMTs. But all of us in these centers are saving lives. And we're there because of a passion and a love for God and his word.
Yeah. And in the real world, the heroes are, pregnancy clinic workers, firefighters, people who are literally rescuing people from a burning building or from a very destructive place. And that's what pregnancy clinic work is rescuing people who are in harm's way.
Even if they're not pregnant, or even when they choose abortion or they come in for parenting, you're turning around generational destruction.
Yeah. Speaking of that, would you share about Psalms 51 in the abortion healing and retreat center? Retreat work.
Talk about confusing people. My life is crazy. I have counseled women all my life. And so I'm not a licensed counselor. I am a certified lay counselor, but I really just, it's about experience. So anyway, I found that I saw something in women that there was something in there deeper. And the deeper was through God leading me through meeting people and reading stuff and and also looking at my own life, it's called shame. And it was not shame for what you've done. It was this sense that women walk around with, Christian women, women who know the Lord, but they walk around with, something's wrong with me. I can't let anybody know, but I feel it. And anyway, I was able to take everything I did with counseling, compile it into a book and a video called Breaking the Shackles of Shame. There's another video you watch before it called Giving God Your Worst that sort of preps you for it. And then Breaking the Shackles of Shame. And after my husband died 10 years ago, I truly felt that God wanted me to do retreats. Had no idea. Jacob, I had no idea. But I built a retreat home. And I was stood there with this beautiful home and went, okay. And then Brandon put my videos on Bright Training and they exploded. And then we started having retreats, and now it's been, we're 5 years into it, and we have retreats March through October. And the retreats are, it is not for women off the street. This is for pregnancy client advocates, women who are serving other women, Christian women who have had trauma, abuse, neglect, whatever in their childhood, who have found Christ, but there is that part that is just, it's there. They can't put their finger on it. They can't put words on it. And yet it, in a way, interjects itself into everything, all your relationship with God. It's really remarkable when you step back and look at it. So I've been able to put words to it and to show hope and give tools. And what I've seen has been nothing short of miraculous. And so would these women watch the videos? And now it's going out into the churches. And so we get women from churches also. But they watch the videos and then they come to retreat. And when they come to retreat, it is unbelievable because they don't know the other women. And yet they bond in a way they've never bonded before. It's Wednesday through Sunday. And it's $100. I keep it cheap so that women can afford it. And we transport you from Phoenix Airport up to the White Mountains of Arizona. Beautiful setting. And so we are starting, and we're just a bunch of beggars. I don't do any superstar stuff. It's celebrity stuff. We're just all beggars, every one of us, me included. And all we're doing is we're sharing truth, the bread of life. And so I hope to create an army of women who have just jettisoned and broken those shackles of shame, and they walk in freedom, because that's where you walk. God intended us to, but Satan is very, very, he's canny and he's clever. And so he doesn't have your soul, but he can sure keep you in shame. When he keeps you in shame, you are not doing what he's called to do, because you're always focused on yourself. It's just, that is just the truth, you know, and shame keeps you always focused on the negative. You know, what if they find out? And so when those break away, the power that comes from that is so exciting, because there's truly freedom. And so I want to just create a whole army of women who are unshackled, and we can be real, and we don't have masks, that we can risk being vulnerable and open. Because if they look inside, it's not what if they find out, because what they find out is Jesus. That's our identity. We need to shift. And so that's what I work on. Anybody who's interested can go to PSA is a website address. Brandon gave it to me. Who does?
Yeah.
.one, not .org, not .com, O-N-E. So Psalm 51 spelled out, but put a dot between
the 50 and the one.
Psalm 50 and the yeah. one. My videos are free there. But
I think your alarm went off.
So,
there you go.
I know someone called.
So I've got a question for you. So I know you're very accustomed to the pine trees, or that surrounding, maybe the peacefulness of that retreat center space. Or, you know, can you describe what it's like to be there? Like, what are the grounds like?
Oh, my gosh. Well, pine trees and beauty and with the pasture. And by the way, anybody can go on the website and you look under about us.
So there are pine trees in Arizona. That's good to know.
Oh, it's the largest stand of pines between Arizona and New Mexico, the largest stand of ponderosa pines in the world.
And then,
and I also, I have a lake. It's actually a pond that wants to be called a lake, as I said. And the lake is part of the retreat also. It's not on premises, but it's not far.
And I've heard from, about a few minutes ago that you're looking to get some fish for that pond or that lake. So that's good.
Largemouth bass that is so big, and catfish that are so delicious. Anyway, but the ladies, they're fish, but they both, But we have that, and then we feed them. We have volunteers. They fly back in. They've been to retreat. They want to serve others. They fly in. It's you're fed. You're loved on. You learn, and you. It's a remarkable. It's actually like no other retreat I know. And so we just keep growing every year. We have another one coming up next week, and then so they can go to the website and look where the retreats are
So the
too.
retreat is for those who need healing, but yet are also serving others, right? That's the.
Or are, yes, they're Christian women, and but there's still that they feel, and they know, those of you who are listening to this, there's something inside of you that you never quite feel that never, there's something wrong with you, like you never quite feel that you're accepted by God. He made a mistake, or he did something wrong, or you just, and you look, and maybe people will see inside if they only knew what was really inside. Women walk around with that, a lot of women, and women in the churches. And that's, we hit that head on, give tools. Women truly walk away free. It's pretty remarkable.
James 5:16 says, "Confess your sins one to another, so you may be healed, and the prayers of a righteous person availeth much." And I'm imagining there's a lot of sharing and prayer from people who,
There is prayer. There's sharing, there's teaching, there's interaction between them, interactive stuff, and the women bond in a way. They're shocked, their bond, that the honesty, but that terrifies people going in. You should see coming out. These ladies are bonding like that's one of the comments. I have comment sheets, and in fact, if people want to go on the website and then sign up down below and subscribe after each retreat, we send out a newsletter with comments and video interviews. And anyway, it's a unique niche. I have worked with young women off the street, so to speak, women who have no Christian background. I've worked with poor and disenfranchised and all of that. But my heart, this is where my heart is. These women who love the Lord, but they never get to fully experience what it's like to be loved because they feel that, well, they're the exception. Something wrong with them. And but they don't ever talk about it. You'd never hear about it.
Well, I'm so glad you're doing that, because that's that sounds like an amazing thing or service or ministry that you're doing there.
It is.
Well,
It
Diana,
is.
I'm really glad you have been on here on the podcast. Would you end our podcast with a prayer, and then we'll invite those who are listening
Absolutely.
to join in whenever they get the chance to hear this.
Father, I come before you and I thank you and I praise you. And Lord, I am always in awe of this tapestry that you're weaving, and all we see is the messy threads on the back. We have no idea, Lord, what a beautiful picture. Just like Father, to have the Catherine Foundation, and to have the roots here in Sholo, Lord, and yet Jacob knows them. And Father, I just know that the tapestry you're weaving is beautiful. It has purpose. It conveys a picture and a message of the gospel. And we're just a thread, just a part of it. And yet, Lord, what a privilege to be that. So thank you. Thank you for everybody's involved. Thank you for everybody who is. Lord, all of these pro-lifers will never see the fruits of their labor oftentimes. And yet, Lord, how many babies are we going to see in heaven? People that they say, I'm here because you were obedient. Thank you for those people out there, Lord, listening, that that's their story. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Lord, forgive, Lord, here and now. We do not make requests because we're righteous, but because of your great mercy. We do not make requests
because we're righteous, but because of your great mercy. For your sake, Lord, don't delay, save your city. Look with favor, see your people who bear your name. Hear our prayers and our petitions, Lord, hear our cry. Hear our prayers and our petitions, Lord, hear our cry. We do not make requests because we're righteous, but because of your great mercy. We do not make requests because we're righteous, but because of your great mercy. For your sake, Lord, look with favor upon your sanctuary. Give ear and ear, see our desolation. We bear your name. Lord, listen. Lord, forgive. Lord, hear and act. Lord, listen. Lord, forgive. Lord, hear and act. We do not make requests because we're righteous, but because of your great mercy. We do not make requests because we're righteous, but because of your great mercy. Lord, listen. Lord, forgive. Lord, hear and act. Lord, listen. Lord, forgive. Lord, hear and act. Lord, listen. Lord, forgive. Lord, hear and act. Lord, listen. Lord, forgive. Lord, hear and act.